Tell us a little bit about yourself, honestly.
So, okay, absolutely. So I've lived in Ketchikan since 2001. I moved up here with my parents. My mom graduated from nursing school in May of 2001. And ever since my dad was a little kid, he always wanted to move to Alaska. And so after mom graduated, they started looking for a job up here. And first one they found was here at the hospital in Ketchikan. And so my mom moved up here in June. And my dad was a contractor in South Carolina. And so he had a few jobs to finish up. So I stayed with my dad in South Carolina until August. And then we took our road trip across the country and up through Canada and came to Ketchikan on the ferry from Prince Rupert. And I was an only child at the time. Since then, I have three younger brothers, ranging from ages 16 down to 6. And then I've been married to my wife, Lisa, for almost 3 years now. And we're expecting our first child in May of next year. Graduated from Ketchikan School District here in 2014. In 2013, when I was still a high school senior, I ran for a seat on the Ketchikan School Board and won. So I served 5 years on the Ketchikan School Board, including 2 terms as board president. I finished up my service on the board in August of this year. And so public service has always been something that's very important to me ever since I was a little kid in the Cub Scouts. And so I had the amazing honor of being able to serve my community in elected office starting when I was 18. And I served on the Governor's Alaska Juvenile Justice Advisory Commission. I served on the State Association of School Boards. And so that's kind of a little bit about me in a nutshell. Love to hunt, love to fish. I'm a small business owner and manager, and so that's kind of me in a nutshell.
Okay, definitely. And the business you own, is it like a construction business?
So I own a public, I'm an owner of a public relations and marketing firm, and then I also work as the administrative manager and director of government affairs for Ward Cove Group, which is the conglomerate of companies that's working on the economic revitalization of the old Ketchikan pulp mill properties.
Okay, definitely. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
And then, so we've been hearing a little bit of the news about you and the school board in Ketchikan recently. And how you're not serving on that school board. Tell us what happened.
So what happened, there's been some contentious issues that have faced Ketchikan School District over the last, I would say, 2 years. Everything from teacher union contract negotiations to, unfortunately, this past summer we had a recently retired longtime teacher get arrested for sexual assault of students within the district. And so a lot of raw emotions, a lot of like I said, contentious issues. And so there were a group of citizens that filed a recall petition against myself. And so we were going through the recall process, and they went through the signature collection process, and they gained enough signatures to put the question on the ballot. And with everything that was going on at the school district level and within our community, things that were divisive and not good for the school district moving forward. So ultimately, I took a look at the bigger picture overall. And public service is not about any one individual. This is not a one-man show. It wasn't about me. And so I wanted to be able to provide the opportunity for there to be a healing process for our community, for our school district, our staff, our students. And to, if the community wanted to take the school board in a different direction, I believe they have the right to do so. And so I wanted to afford the community that opportunity. And so I stepped down as the president of the school board in August, not admitting any guilt or anything. I I believe I served my community well and was elected to 2 terms on the board. And it wasn't, again, it wasn't about me in the process of figuring out, okay, how can we move forward in the right direction in a positive manner? And so I wanted to take a holistic approach, and so I ultimately made the decision to step down from the board. And even amidst all of that, I continue to receive tremendous support for my state house run. And so we worked through the political process of the recall, and it's not something I'm afraid to talk about. And I'm glad that in our state, our citizens have the right to work, the right to the recall process, and that's a part of governing. And so we had that conversation, and I had no problem saying, you know, this is something the community should be able to weigh in on, the direction of our school district, and how we can maybe, if there's something new the community wants to do to address these issues, I'm more than willing to facilitate that. And so that's why I ultimately departed from the school board.
Absolutely. And so you are running against Dan Ortiz. Just tell me, what do you think of Ortiz?
I think Representative Ortiz is a very nice guy. He's been an active part of our community for a very long time. He was a longtime teacher. I get along well with Dan. We disagree on a lot of the issues, and that's what this campaign is about. I'm proud that both of us have made this a very issue-oriented campaign, haven't brought personalities or personal issues or anything into the race. We've kept it very positive about our individual records and our ideological differences. And so I think Dan Ortiz is a very nice guy, and I have no personal qualms or issues with him whatsoever. We're always very cordial every time we have a debate or a joint function. And he was my representative when I was leading the school board, and so we had several different issues we worked on, and we were able to work on some things together, even though we disagreed. And so I think that's what's so nice about Southeast Alaska and smaller communities, is at the end of the day, we're all in this together, and after the elections are over, we pull together and work in solidarity to solve the problems that face our communities.
Yes. So, yeah, so you all are, you know, you're fine with him. He's fine with you. But yeah, tell me what are the political differences between you and Ortiz? You know, what had Ortiz done that would make you say, I need to put my name in the hat?
So there, like I said, there are definitely some stark ideological and philosophical differences between Representative Ortiz and I, and I think at the end of the day, it comes down to what we each believe the role of government to be. Representative Ortiz is a registered nonpartisan. I am a registered Republican, but if you just put the labels aside, everyone, communities, and then the news acknowledge that I'm on the more center-right end of the spectrum, and Representative Ortiz is on the center-left. And so what ultimately prompted me to run was I started having conversations with folks in Ketchikan and Wrangell and in the other communities in our district about is the status quo working for our district, for our region? Is Southeast better off than it was 4 years ago? Is the state of Alaska better off than it was 4 years ago? And I found the answer to that question more often than not to be no. And so I think government works best closest to the people. I think it's important to have a representative who understands the cause and effect of what the legislature does and how that affects local communities, local governing bodies, nonprofits, businesses, and individual citizens. And so I've worked in local government. I've worked in business. I've sat on the board of several nonprofits. And so I believe that I have a different set of skills than Representative Ortiz, have a different experiences and perspectives. And then my approach to the economy and the role of government is different than Representative Ortiz. He supports a lower PFD and an income tax, and and bigger government. I believe in paying a full PFD, that we don't need any income tax, and that we can do things, the way I put it, for government is harder, better, faster, stronger. We can do things smarter. We can do things more creatively, things that don't require draconian cuts, but making things more efficient and effective. And I have a record of doing that from my time on the school board. When I first was elected, we were facing hundreds of thousands of dollars in budget cuts. And what we did is we sat down as a board and we said, these are our long-term strategic goals. This is what we want the outcome to be after this is all said and done. So we were facing declining revenue. We made those cuts. We did things better. We stuck to our priorities. We were able to continue to support individualized, personalized education, increased career, technical, and vocational opportunities, increase the graduation rate, all while doing things leaner and meaner. And I think that's important. And so the difference that I'm trying to portray is, At the end of the day, I think Representative Ortiz has been looking at solutions for the government, look at solutions for people. I want to look at doing things that work better for the individual, hardworking Alaskans. And so, and that's something I think that's been overshadowed by the various things that have faced our state with the budget. I think to some extent that it's been a crisis that's been man-made and overplayed. I think if we had done things differently and kept the focus on regions and individual communities and providing them the tools and the resources to be successful and taking a more directed, compartmentalized approach to each various issue, that we would find that we've always had the tools and the resources to solve these problems. And I think at the end of the day, a restructure of the permanent fund and an income tax is just an excuse for the government to be able to continue bad behavior. So those are kind of, like I said, the ideological and philosophical differences that Representative Ortiz and I have. And that's okay. That's what makes our republic great. And that the contrast is important, and it's good for people to be able to have two different choices. And that's why I ultimately decided to run.
Absolutely. And yes, so, you know, you talked about the budget and how, you know, you don't think Alaska needs to have that state income tax. You don't think the Alaskan government needs to reduce the PFD. And so your solution to, you know, the budget, So what should we be doing with the budget? What more should we be cutting? How should we be getting more revenue? And like you said, this is a man-made crisis. You know, what do you mean by that?
And so I made note of, I think we've always had the tools and the resources available to help us. And I think the solution to the problem consists of kind of three things. The distributable income of the permanent fund earnings is what pays the permanent fund dividend. And the statutory formula has always been that 50% of that income would be available and appropriated for the permanent fund dividend, and the other 50% would be available for appropriation by the legislature. And each 50% is roughly $2 billion a year. The legislature never used that, the $2 billion portion per year that it was allowed to use. And instead of supplementing our decline in revenue with the allowed portion, the state's allowed portion of the permanent fund earnings was always just sat in the earnings reserve in that account. And so if we had supplemented the $14 billion in savings that we burned through with that portion of the distributable income, we would probably, instead of only having right around $2 billion in the constitutional budget reserve, we would have right around $10 billion. And so, and our deficit is, right now, it's approximately $2.3 billion. And so we could use up to the $2 billion of the distributable income to cover the large majority of that deficit. The other thing that we have to look at is tax parity and fairness. In Alaska, we are the only state that isn't completely organized into county equivalents, which in Alaska are boroughs. And so every borough has a pre-mandated state property tax to pay for education. The unincorporated areas of our state don't have that tax. So, for example, Thorne Bay on Prince of Wales Island, the state will cover 100% of their budget. And in Ketchikan and Wrangell, the state will cover only approximately 85 to 87% of the budget. And so if that property tax, which is called the required local contribution, was made statewide and was implemented as a fair tax, we would see approximately $180 million in new revenue to the state. And so that leaves your deficit at right around $120 million, which I think we can close through some various efficiencies and, like I said, making things work leaner and meaner. For example, the state legislature in this past session approved a $500,000 study on vitamin D deficiency in Alaska. We live in a state where the days get short for a large portion of the year. It's dark, and in southeast Alaska, it's rainy and cloudy. Alaskans are vitamin D deficient. We did not need a $500,000 study to tell us that. The governor's LNG advisor is making $100,000 a month, $1.2 million a year. And so right there, that's approximately $1.7 million. Round that up to $2 million. Okay, that leaves, and those are just two things. And so that, through making things work better and smarter, I think we can find an additional $75 to $100 million in reductions and savings without affecting essential services pretty easily. And so then as we continue to look at developing our natural resources and diversification of our economy, Alaska has the best environmental protections and resource development regulations in not only the United States, but some of the best in the world. And so we need to continue to diversify the expansion of our natural resources, timber, fishing, mining, do so in a way where we see an increase in the royalties and the taxes coming from those resource development. And that will continue to replenish the state coffers, as well as we found several new oil fields. And so if we can get those online, even though the price of oil is low, if we increase the production and the throughput in the pipeline, we're going to see an increase, a corresponding increase in revenue as well. And so right now, we only have about 500,000 barrels of oil a day going through the pipeline. It used to be 2 million. I think we can be right around 1.2, 1 million barrels a day pretty easily. And so, and that would result in a several hundred million dollar increase of revenue to the state. And we're mandated by our state constitution to develop our resources to the benefit of Alaskans. And so I think if we focus on those things, if we make taxes fair, if we use the permanent fund as in a smart way where we can continue to pay a full dividend while also covering a portion of the state's deficit as needed, develop our resources and encourage investment by businesses, and we see a corresponding increase in revenue because of that, and more local involvement in the provision of services. I think we're going to be able to solve the budget deficit that we have. And these are tools that we've always had. We just haven't had the leaders who are willing to stand up and say, well, these aren't popular decisions. These are the decisions that are going to have a meaningful, positive impact on Alaska while keeping hard-earned income in the pockets of working Alaskans.
Absolutely. And then, you know, one thing you're saying is there are local tools to solve these problems, to do local work that is being funded by the state. Can you explain, like, you know, what does that look like?
So, for example, and I'll just use Prince of Wales because it's part of it is unincorporated. For schools over in Thorne Bay, the local school district doesn't really have any tools to be able to use local resources to pay for capital projects and infrastructure needs. That money comes out of the state capital budget, and so whereas in Ketchikan and Wrangell, we can bond, we can accept donations by local organizations and entities. We can use tax revenue to be able to pay for our capital needs our capital projects and infrastructure. And so there are many places in the state where the communities, although they might be willing to and want to be able to make those investments, they don't have the governing mechanism to be able to do so. And so I think enabling our local governments, putting the focus back on, okay, the communities are going to be in the driver's seat on the things that happen in their communities and their regions, because they understand the social, the cultural, the economic needs, and they understand the capacity of what their community can do for investment of resources into providing services. And so those mechanisms haven't existed yet. We haven't afforded those opportunities to those communities to be able to make those investments. And so we don't even necessarily know what that'll look like until we have that conversation and give them the tools to be able to do that. And so it's as much enabling communities to be able to do some of their own work and make their own investments as much as it is anything else. And then we can leave that to each community, and I think sometimes on a regional basis, to make the decisions that work best for them in a manner that's sustainable. And so until we provide those tools and until we have those conversations, we don't necessarily know what it's going to look like. But I can guarantee you, because I've seen it here at the local level in Ketchikan and how important it is to be able to have those local governing tools, that the investment will pay off and it will make a difference.
All right, absolutely. And maybe let's wrap up with some questions about education, considering, you know, your opponent has been in education, you've been in education. Tell me, I think first off, do you support do you support public vouchers going to charter schools?
Well, charter schools are in Alaska are actually a part of each school district, and so charter schools in Alaska are different than they are in other places in the country. But I get the question that you're asking. Do I believe vouchers should be made available to private schools? You know, that's, again, it's a conversation that we have to have. But first, there is a provision of the state constitution that prohibits public dollars from going to private schools. And so that conversation would be, do we think that there is any benefit to allowing public dollars to be able to go to private schools? I think that's a conversation worth having. Whatever the outcome might be, is what can we do to improve the educational outcomes of our students? Not saying that things are bad, but they can certainly be better. In some cases, we're on the wrong end of the statistics when it comes to education, so that's something we need to improve. And so we have to have every conversation that we possibly can. I think we need to have a conversation talking about education as a whole, about some of the regional approaches to education. What works in interior and rural Alaska is obviously going to be very different than what works in Southeast Alaska or in downtown Anchorage. And so, you know, having that varying approach, the different perspective, making sure we're not taking a cookie cutter style approach to education. And that's what we did here in Ketchikan when I was on the school board. We were able to take what looked like drastic budget cuts, declining resources, and make our school district work better. We were able to improve educational outcomes. We were able to improve student performance and the opportunities available to our students. How did we do that? We developed a local funding formula with our local borough that provide stability and expectations for what school funding is going to look like at a minimum year to year. So that way, you know, it's not always this roller coaster of, oh, are we going to get $4 million for the borough? Are we going to get $7 million? We stabilized that out. We dedicated funding sources and built a formula out of that so that we can like I said, provide some stability and calmness to the approach to education funding. We took the politics out of it, made it resource-driven, made it driven by numbers, something that provides expectations and long-term sustainability moving forward. That's just one example, but again, that's not something you can do unless you have those local governing units and bodies in place. And so that's why I think it's important to afford the ability for these communities to be able to have those opportunities and use those tools is so important. So we have to understand we have declining resources. We have to understand that education as a whole isn't very different than the way we were doing things in the 1950s and 60s. So how can we create a 21st century form of education that focuses on the individual personalized needs of our students that results in excellent education outcomes? And that's a conversation that you can't take anything off the table. You do have to provide some stability and reliability in what funding is going to look like. I'm very supportive of forward funding. I think this legislature's funding of education should, at the very least, be on a two-year cycle. And, you know, if we start doing some of these things by driving the numbers of what our investment of resources into these departments and programs look like, if we start doing that on a formula basis, we can take the emotion and politics out of things and not make each department and program and function of government a political bargaining tool every time we come to the table, because that's not good for Alaskans, that's not good for local governments, that's not good for government employees, for the people of our state. And so, like I said, a lot of this I feel is man-made, and we can take the crisis out of the scenario and provide some reasonable expectations of what Alaska is going to look like moving forward. This shouldn't be a year-to-year thing where we wonder what we're going to do next. We need a long-term strategic plan, not only for education, but for our state as a whole. We have to know where we're going, our destination, so we can work towards that. And I think that's what Alaskans deserve to have, is to know what we're working towards. And so we can all be in the same ship, rowing in the same direction together. And so I think that's kind of where the approach has differed is I think we've been so laser focused on the state, we haven't looked at Alaska as a whole, community by community, and with a focus on the people of how do we make it out of this mess, because we still have a lot to do. There's still a lot of work to be done, but I don't think we're all uniformly moving in the same direction, and I think we need some new leadership to help us work towards that. I know that's a really long answer, but it kind of tying in my overall view on how I think we can make this thing work in a positive, meaningful manner that's good for Alaska.